And welcome back to your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan in with you. Okay, so on the phone with me is Jen Ford. She is the executive director of the Butler County Historical Society, which includes the Senator Walter Lowry House. And I wanted to have her on for a few minutes because I know the date has passed on when they reopened the house, if you will, after redecorating. But I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So, Jen, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me on to talk about this.
So a rebuild is always fun, you know, in any house, but when it comes to an historical place, it just adds another element. Why did the group decide to go forward with this renovation?
Long story short, it had been quite some number of years before the museum rooms, the rooms in this historic home had been addressed in any way. The displays were pretty static. The exhibits really hadn't been changed for quite some time. That combined with the fact that there were dozens, maybe hundreds of boxes between the house and our storage building that hadn't been opened for decades and decades. So we, quite frankly, took advantage of the lockdown during between March and June to empty out all of those boxes, empty all the drawers, the cupboards, the closets under desks, see what we had, and then go ahead and, while we were closed to the public, completely renovate and redecorate.
Did you get some surprises out of those boxes?
We certainly did. Just about every day, somebody was shouting, come here and look at this. What I didn't realize, what was truly one of the most pleasant surprises of my career, and I'll give you just a little background to get you in context. Even though this is the Senator Walter Lowry House, and he did build the house in 1828, the family who lived here longest for four generations was the Sullivan family. And they first moved in 1839 when the last member of that family passed away in 1959. Her daughter, who grew up here but was then living in Bradford, locked the house up. So for all intents and purposes, it sat for nearly 30 years as an untouched time capsule. When Isabel, that last descendant, passed away, she gave the Butler County Historical Society the house and all of the contents. They, of course, came in the 1980s, boxed everything up, and put it in storage while they repaired and renovated the house itself. And I honestly don't think that many of those items were reboxed, were unboxed once they were brought back into the house. So we got to open and discover what was actually in here, which was all of the Sullivan family's four generations worth of clothing, books, personal items, silverware, textiles, table linens, anything you can imagine that a family living in a home over four generations might collect. It was still here. So
I find that fascinating. And in your viewpoint as a historian, history is not my forte, but I love going on vacations where you can go into a historical setting. And so I love being able to learn history that way. You know, I'm more of a hands-on instead of just reading a book. And so when you see different items come out of a box, tell me about your viewpoint, because me, not being an historian, I would probably say, well, here's a spoon, you know, where you would think, wow, that's a treasure. And so how do we know anything, any box that we may find in an old attic, that it may be a treasure versus just something that we feel is old?
Right. Well, I hate to be trite, but in a way, in a circumstance of a private person opening a box and finding an heirloom or a treasure, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. If I opened a box and found my great-great-grandmother's spoon, I would be over the moon. It would be irreplaceable. I wouldn't sell it under any circumstances. The spoon itself might be a plain pewter spoon worth about $1 on eBay. So in that context, really historical context and family history are everything. In this situation, I'm a material culturalist, which means I interpret history through objects. And as a museum consultant for many years, My job was to go into museums and historic sites and teach them how to use a simple object. Could be anything you name as the opening gambit in a discussion about history. So, for example, if you found a glorious woman's dress from the 1880s, 1890s, one person might look at it and say, oh, look at the textiles, look at the cut, the color. Can you imagine wearing that to a ball? I look at it and say, yes, all of this, but let's also unpack what it meant to wear that dress and how constrained it made your movements.
Right.
How you felt
right.
about yourself, how you identified, how men identified you, what it limited you from doing in society, as well as who made that dress and under what circumstances did she labor. So,
And I love that perspective, too, because when I go into an historical place, I then start to realize how easy it might not have been. You know, I think we get this glorious picture off of movies, and it's
right.
interesting to see movies. Of course, I love historical pieces as well. But then when you really get down to it, all those things that you're describing, you know, I think, wow, that dress would be neat to wear. And then as you're describing it, it's like, I don't know if I'd want, like, all the corsets and, you know, layers underneath to have to wear that.
Honestly, I understand many women have found, I know quite a number of actresses find when they corset for a part, it actually provides lots of support. In a way, they like it, but worn all day, mm-hmm. every day, is a different story.
And restrooms not being as available
well,
as we have them.
Yeah,
convenient,
I mean,
we'll put it that way.
If you want to get to the nitty-gritty, quite frankly, when you got under all of those hoops and petticoats and undergarments and skirts and skirts and skirts and skirts, there wasn't anything. So, quite frankly, what they did was just stand over a pot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my husband and I just got done watching the movie Turn. I don't know if it's a Revolutionary War about the spy, Washington spies.
Oh,
and,
yeah, haven't
yeah.
seen it. Yeah.
Oh, it's good. It's really good. So when they go to the restroom, there's the two folks holding the pots for somebody
yeah.
to grab, and they just go behind the door. And it's just, it was
yeah.
interesting to see that.
Yeah, it is. It's not always cracked up to be.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I'd love to go back in time, but as a visitor,
right.
I need my
back.
Bathroom, I need my air conditioning,
right,
I need
right.
my medicine.
Well, let's fast forward back up to where we are today, because, again, Jen Ford is on the phone with me, the executive director of the Butler County Historical Society, which includes the Senator Walter Lowry House. Talk about the rooms that you did renovate and how different they look.
We did the two downstairs rooms that are open to the public, the parlor and the dining room. And what I did for the whole house, really, the parlor, the dining room, upstairs I did a children's room, which is where Isabel would have grown up. Moses's room, Moses Sullivan lived here for many, many years. He was an attorney. And then Louise's room, she married, moved away, and then was widowed very young and moved back into the house. So they all cut all of those five rooms that we redid, plus two hallways. We staged as if it's sometime between about 1880 and 1910. We didn't limit ourselves to just a year because, as I mentioned, this was a family who lived here for generations. So we have items from the 1860s, 30s, you know, the 1900s. So each of those rooms, what the concept behind the redo was that this is a Sunday afternoon when the Sullivan family is at home relaxing. So I have the dining room set up as though it's a Sunday brunch in the summer with a full table completely set up with fake food, you know, eggs, raspberries, strawberries, toast, French toast, syrup, butter, everything. And then the parlor set up as though it would be any family room in just about any period on a Sunday afternoon. So people were lounging on the furniture, you know, their throws and pillows and newspapers and pictures that they're looking at. The family were very, very musically inclined. So there's a classical piano and a violin. upstairs, the children's room is staged with the dolls and the games on the floor. And each one of the rooms was decorated with that feel in mind, so that the effect I wanted was that you could walk into any one of these rooms and think, oh, the occupant just stepped out for a moment. I'm intruding. So, you know.
And you get to live history a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, dresses are casually, you know, thrown across furniture, and Moses's shaving gear is out as if he was in the middle of using it, that sort of thing.
Do you ever have reenactors that are a part of this house, or do you ever think that you would ever have that in the future?
We don't as yet, but I can see a day where that might happen. We're planning to do quite a number of events here, and that would be perfect. Just last Saturday, we did the cemetery walk with actors portraying people who were in the cemetery. We had them stand beside the gravesite and talk about the person's life and their emotions, what it was like to actually live that life. And that went so well, I can easily see transposing it to the house sometime.
I have to
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I have to digress again. I'm thinking of the many places I've gone, and I'm really impressed by reenactors who stay in character. I'm so
marvelous.
Impressed in that. Oh, my gosh, especially when people try to trip them up.
Yep.
And their responses are classic. It's impressive.
Right, and you have to be extremely knowledgeable to pull that off. It's one thing to stand beside a gravestone and do a 6-minute speech about a person and then turn around and walk off or close your eyes. It's quite another thing to interact. So we're going to have to find some pretty special, knowledgeable people if we're going to pull that.
We can find. Any future plans that you're able to talk about at this point?
Yeah, and thank you for asking. Our next event actually is coming up on October the 17th, and we're calling it Hair-Raising History. And with you know, all due consideration to COVID and social distancing and masks, what we'll do is have groups of no more than 6 people at a time, masked, come through several of the rooms and one outdoor spot, and they'll be decorated as if the house were completely dark, covered with cobwebs, and we will have people stationed in various rooms telling hair-raisingly terrifying ghost stories.
And what's the response been like for these kinds of events, the reopening that just recently happened, and of course the ghost walk or the cemetery walk has been very popular, yes.
Overwhelming. I was really rather gobsmacked at how popular they instantly were. I know that we're being dealt an especially good hand because people were desperate for things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the Butler Eagle has been extraordinarily kind to us in publicizing what we're up to. For the reopening event, we had people waiting to get in the house, lined up across the porch, down the steps, and across the street. Many people gave up and left. Cemetery walk, we had to turn away dozens and dozens of people. Had we been able to do full complement groups instead of being constrained to 6 to 8 people because of COVID, it would have been absolutely packed and very, very... So we're counting on the fact that next year it will be packed, and it doesn't hurt that now we're a hot ticket. We first went online with the Facebook post for Hair-Raising History yesterday and came in this morning to discover an inbox chock full of people who are buying tickets. So I would say a word to the wise... don't wait to buy tickets. Once again, because of the pandemic, we can only allow so many people
in. Right. And history's in our backyard, and I think sometimes when we've gotten so busy in our lives, we forget about the history that's staring us in the face.
It's true. It doesn't matter where you live. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a Pittsburgher, and I have not been to so many historic sites because you're busy with your life.
Right. Right. And then you go on vacation and go elsewhere to go visit history.
Right.
And meanwhile,
right.
It's like you could have just walked downtown.
Yeah. The grass is greener.
Right. Right. Did you ever see or envision a moment like, we'll say Williamsburg or, you know, someplace in Virginia or, you know, the colonies or something? Do you ever envision like a place in Butler that we could hold, or a time in Butler that we could hold, like a historical moment that we kind of transform you know, downtown into a historical place, or do we just not have the buildings to do that?
I think, unfortunately, too many of the buildings have been torn down and replaced. But it's very, very difficult. I've spent the last decade in Bedford, PA, which is blessed with still being a 90% still intact historic town, dating back to the mid-18th century. And even with all the available historic treasures still standing, pulling that off takes a commitment of community that's, quite frankly, quite difficult to find these days.
Sure.
I mean, the entire community has to be all in and willing to work very hard for nearly a year to pull something like that off. I can envision perhaps at Christmas time a number of the stores, and my impression is that there are new specialty shops opening in Butler. I think there are exciting things going on down on Washington Street where we might join forces with the Little Theater and the Symphony and do Christmas in Butler, a la whatever arrow we pick.
Yeah.
Because I think people are so hungry to get back to when Butler was, you know, a thriving, bustling town where people came to shop.
But it's interesting to learn the historical nature of where we live, too, because,
yeah,
you know, you could sit here and tell me, well, just bits and pieces now that I'm learning, and I think, huh, I didn't know that. You know, so it's interesting to turn around and just slow down for a moment and learn about what's around you.
That is a gift that Coven has given us.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Jen Ford with us, of course, with the Senator Walter Lowry House, but the Butler Historical Society.
Yeah, the Butler Historical Society, we are reopened for business, and I think on track to do a lot of exciting events. And the house is open for people to tour.
I was going
to
ask, how do we go about doing that? Do we schedule our own private tour with you, or talk us through that?
Yes, please. We're still very, very busy getting things in order over here, so we're unable, since there are just two of us, to throw open the doors every day for people to wander in. But people can call 724-283-8116 and book a private tour. We'll be happy to take you through. Either the collections manager is Sarah Donaldson. Either she or I would take you through the house on a private tour. And I think the cost is nominal. I think we're charged something like $5. Members, by the way, can come in free. And our membership is rising, and I encourage people to join, because any of the events we have, they're always member-priced tickets that are at a discount. The other place we can think about staging one of those time machine moments is out at Cooper Cabin.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once again, because of the pandemic, one of our board members' husbands was left without much to do this summer, and so he went out and just made the place impeccably.
Oh, that'd be nice to see.
Yeah, so next year we're planning to have events out there, and we might be able to pull something like that off, because there are lots of Civil War and French and Indian War reenactors.
Jen, I want to ask you another question. I forgot to ask you this while we were talking about boxes, and then I'll let you go. But when you find a piece, especially when we were talking about the surprises out of the box, how do you go about researching that piece and knowing it's authentic?
Well, in the best of all possible worlds, there is a record of its accession. Accession is a museum term for bringing something in and recording it, where it's located, where it came from, its history, et cetera. If we're lucky, that information is available. If not, we're left playing history detective and putting together cross-referencing mentions in letters. Simple common sense like, oh, the silverware has Sullivan on it, or an S on it, or the textiles have S on it, which could be Sullivan or Shaw, or somebody at some point very happily threw a note in a box that said, Shaw House Dresses.
Did people write down everything? And I ask that sincerely, because, again, watching all these historical shows that we do at home, we keep hearing references to, well, in the letter that we found. And it just seems like people wrote everything down.
Well, they did. You know, people committed things to paper once upon a time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the age of texts is going to leave historians in a bit of a lurch, not only because it's difficult to access, but because the brevity of our communication. You know, be over at 5, heart emoji.
Right. Yeah, you don't even get words sometimes nowadays.
Yeah, seriously, 100 years from now, what's an historian, you know, as opposed to opening a letter that one family member wrote to another.
Years ago, it was hard to decipher what they said. Now we don't even know what we're saying because we have pictures. So we've gone the total opposite route with our communication. But, hey, Jen, thank you so much for spending the time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been fun.
And, of course, the Senator Walter Lowry House open for you folks to go through. And, of course, Butler Historical Society doing some great things. Glad to hear it. And, of course, we'll be in touch again, Jen.
Thanks so much.